Today on the On.NET Show, we're going to be learning about containerized database applications, Docker, Entity Framework, SQL Server, Linux, all that stuff. Come watch it. Hello, welcome to another episode of On.NET. Today we have Julie Lerman, who's going to talk to us about Docker and Entity Framework. Welcome, Julie.
Hey, Rich.
How about you tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into the topic.
Sure. Well, a lot of people might know I've done some work with Entity Framework over the years, a few books. I also write a column for MSDN Magazine called Data Points. I'm an MVP. I just got my 17th award.
Oh, my gosh.
It makes me feel so old.
Or so appreciated.
Yeah, thanks. Microsoft Regional Director, and you've probably heard this one before. I don't work for Microsoft. I don't have a region, and I don't direct anything. Docker Captain.
I didn't know you were a Docker Captain.
Yeah. So that's all, you know, my volunteer work. And then what I do, you know, for a living is I do software coaching and mentoring. I do a lot of work with domain-driven design and... So, yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah. So do you have like a shirt somewhere that's got like all these badges on it with all, you know?
No.
I remember when I was small, my mother had this hoodie before hoodies were cool with all my like swim badges on it. Anyway, yeah. I actually wish I still had that.
Brownies, Girl Scout badges. Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah.
Long time ago.
For sure. So before we really get talking, you and I have something in common, which is, and you're a little bit ahead of me on this, but we've both been buying gravel bikes.
Well, I only bought one.
Well, sorry, bikes plural between the two of us.
I understand.
We shouldn't dwell on this topic, but like 30 seconds. What is a gravel bike and why would someone want one?
Well, I've always been on a hardcore road bike. I'm not a racer, but I've always been asphalt road bike. Where I live, there's so many dirt roads and I have to work really hard to make sure that when I plan routes that, you know, if there's dirt, I don't want to be too many miles on it or real rocks or anything. And so this bike it's just designed a little more comfortably. Compliant?
Yeah. Oh, that's the word I use.
Oh. Well, the other interesting thing about it is that it's disc brakes now, which leaves more room for the tire width. So instead of being on 23-millimeter tires, now, you know, I'm on 28. I can throw in 32s if I want. I live on a steep dirt road. I live in Vermont. And I can just fly down that road now. And it's easier to go up it too.
Yeah, we actually, I think, ride on more like 40s up here. So next time you're in town.
Oh, so you're doing more like mountain bike ride.
Yeah, next time you're in town, we have this ride called Thrilla, which has this
Thrilla
hill on it called.
Seattle?
Pardon me?
Thrilla in Seattle?
Something like that. So next time you're in town, we'll have to do that. And
okay.
There's some other folks that we'll bring along for the ride. So it'll be awesome.
Okay, just so long as I don't end up with, you know, scratches and bumps and bruises.
Okay, we'll just try and avoid broken bones.
Okay.
Okay, so let's get back to the, you know, .NET and database stuff.
Oh, right, Yeah, that.
So what specifically are you going to be talking to us about today?
Well, I've been, I always like to put together the things that I'm learning. So I have been doing a lot of work with Docker and databases like SQL Server and Docker, but I never really thought about, you know, what if I'm using Entity Framework and doing things in containers? So I actually went through that process and, you know, like we always do, bumped my head a whole bunch of times just because there were some concepts that I didn't understand, which is how you learn, right?
Yeah, and I think Docker really is, or containerized applications, really is a different form of computing. It's this kind of like single isolated process model is the way that I choose to think about it. And that's not the way we think about desktop or even really server computing.
No. And, you know, I used to really just be confused by the whole container thing and just thought, oh, it's for like rocket scientist kind of people. And I actually, it was when SQL Server became SQL Server for Linux. They created that and then put it in a container. It was the first time I finally played with it and, you know, had to just get over some, well, a little bit of fear, a little bit of miscomprehension, like, you know, because you start trying to compare it to what you already know. The biggest thing I think people compare it to is virtual machines.
Right.
Huge difference is virtual machine has an operating system in it.
Yeah, maybe containers and virtual machines are kind of a poor analogy for one another, because I kind of think of containers as being an alternative to what people have used virtual machines for and with quite different characteristics.
I totally agree. I think the analogy starts because it's the closest thing that people have to try to comprehend it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they start there, but then if they get stuck there, it's a problem. But at least it gives, there's so many times when I've seen these, like, you know, introductions to Docker, and I've done the same thing. It's like, it's not a virtual machine, and kind of comparing what the virtual machine. So it gives context where people can start at least, you know, but because they've already been there. But it's not, it's like a virtual machine, but.
But
it's just that people come into it thinking that. Anyway, I bet you've done a whole bunch of shows on intros to Docker.
Yeah, so we don't need to do that thing.
Yeah, yeah, cool. So what I wanted to do was, you know, take the little bit of experience I had with Docker for SQL Server and really start making it a little more real. I wanted to, you know, build an app, not just, you know, spin up a SQL Server and in a container and go, oh, that's cool, and now I can connect to it from this, and oh yeah, I understand, you know, try to understand what's going on, but actually to start writing some code. And also, I focused so much on working on my Mac. I was in Visual Studio Code. I was at the command line, and I knew there were these great tools for Docker and Visual Studio also, and I wanted to give them a try. So I actually went through this whole process of starting from scratch, creating projects, creating APIs, using Docker, worrying about protecting passwords, and even deploying, right? Deploying it to Azure, deploying it to Azure containers or to a Linux container that is hosted on Azure, and just really understanding how all those things work. So it was a really great experience.
I'm sure that's good
for
your...
A lot of fun.
Sorry.
That's okay. I just said it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, but I'm sure that's good for your consulting practice to have all of that experience and competence in that space.
I hope so.
Well,
so far
works.
It's been, you know, writing articles, but I've been having a lot of fun doing a variety of new conference sessions too with all these new skills. So it's kind of fun. Yeah.
So you told me, and I think I actually saw this on Twitter, that you have an MSDN magazine article on all this same stuff that you published.
Three.
Yeah. Could you tell us about that? Show us. Okay. So this is the article. So April 2019. So it's only a couple months old.
Yeah, so, but it's three. I had so much that I learned and so much I was writing about. Not only are there the three articles, but there's also, I did a huge, a big blog post about deploying one of these examples to Azure, right? Because not just doing the development on my machine, but really deploying it and running it, deploying it for test, right, not production. And then I wrote another really long one. I wrote it for Docker. It's not on their blog yet, though. And that one was taking a fully containerized solution and putting it into a Linux container on Azure and just, you know, going through all those steps, because all of it was learning experience, learning curves for me. So it was really, really important to share that.
And which Azure service did you use for the container hosting?
One scenario was my API was in a container pointing to an Azure SQL database. So I only had one container. So I used, Azure Container Services. Didn't that change its name?
There's
months ago.
Yeah, so there's several kind of options.
Yeah.
There's a container hosting option in App Service. There's Azure Kubernetes Service, AKS.
Yeah, I wasn't using that.
Yeah, then there's Azure Container Service, which believe is no longer the one that people point to. And then there's Azure Container Instance, which is kind of
That's it. So what I did was I pushed the image up to
ACI.
Up to ACI. And then from, if you've just got one container to run, right, you're not doing composition, then you can literally just run that. And that's actually what I did in my my blog post. So let me just
I've used ACI as well. It's an awesome testing tool, like in exactly the same way that you've used it. Super easy to be productive with it.
So there's the blog post. It's from May 2nd on, but you could see it's really, 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 really long. but that's the one where I did that. I just had the single image because my database was then Azure SQL, right? So I didn't have the database in a container in this example.
Right. That is a more straightforward scenario.
Yep. Yep. And then the second one was for the more complicated setup. I mean, not complicated. It's just a more composed, orchestrated setup where I had SQL Server in a container and the APIs in the container.
Okay.
So those I deployed into a Linux container, right? And then was running. That was the host for those. Anyway.
Makes sense. So do you want to show us some code?
Yeah. So what I want to do is first share that initial experience, because I ran into something that was confusing to me because, you know, I still was learning and understanding Docker. So what I've done is I've just set up a simple ASP.NET Core API, right? Like, a web API. Mm-hmm. This has nothing to do with Docker yet, even though it says Docker in here. That's because I, you know, unwound it. And it uses Entity Framework to interact with a local DB. So I guess I'll start. I'll go into my app settings and show you. You know, I'm using, this is my connection string, right? Just a local DB on my computer. And I have an Entity Framework Core context. One of the things that's doing is seeding some data. It is so simple. This is the only class in there, right? Magazine, ID, and name, because it's not about building a model, right? That's just just needed the simplest thing I could find. So I'm taking advantage of one of the ways to seed a database, right? So it's self-seeding. And what else? I've got, the ASP.NET Core startup, and in there, it's adding the DB context. So just, basic EF Core use inside of an API. The other thing that I'm doing in this, and I just want to point out this is a demo, is that I'm triggering Entity Framework Core to migrate my database when the application starts up, right? And I'm just doing that. I've got that inside the app because it's a demo. So given that we're eventually talking about having this in Docker, you might have it in multiple containers running at the same time. You don't want all those containers migrating the same database at the same, you know, at the same time. There right. could be a problem. So that's demoware.
And just for context, how would you normally do database migration?
You know, if in this kind of environment where I would have my application in multiple containers, I don't want the application responsible for the database. So I could use, if it's SQL Server, you've got all kinds of tools for you know, running scripts and creating the databases there. I've been also playing with Flyway, which is one of the migrating apps. I've actually, one of my conference sessions, I've got a demo where I have an API in one container, database in another container, and then I have another container that's a Flyway, right, from a Flyway image, this application, and I run it so that it does the database migration, and then it shuts down. So it does that. It's just like a one-shot deal.
Makes sense. So should I just think, though, that the way you would do this normally is part of a more orchestrated deployment?
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. So I just think it's important to make sure I state that this is demoware. Okay.
Got it.
And this is this migrate database, that's not built in. That's just some custom stuff that I built based on some ideas that maybe I think it was Bryce Lamson, somebody on the EF team had in, you know, they were showing in a Docker issue. So there's code behind that. But that's essentially calling Entity Framework's migrate command to
Perfect.
Do the migration. So that's how that's happening. And then I have a controller that's just, you know, stupid simple default controller created by the template. That's really all that I have. So remember, this is not in a container. This is just running on metal, and it's using local DB, and I'll go ahead and run that. I just have some breakpoints, but I'm just going to fly through them. And then now it's just going to go to web host, and there it's running, right?
Okay.
So the key here is that I'm using local DB, and I think it's pretty typical when we're starting development to use local DB, you know, starting development and we plan to use SQL Server, like so many of us use local DB when we're doing development and working against it. So now what I want to do is, you know, the kind of the steps that I went through, okay, let's see if I take this and then make it be in a container.
Can I just butt in for just one second?
We could have created a new project, and I'm just going to just show you from the template. You've probably shown this before. If I was starting a new project, new project, you can create a new project that's already got Docker in it, got Docker support, right? That's one of the options here, enable Docker support. So you could start a new project and have the Docker support already baked in.
Totally.
But I created something that didn't have that. So I'm going to use the Docker, and all of that's available because I've got the Docker Tools extension installed in Visual Studio. So I don't know, they're in here somewhere.
Wow, you have a lot of things installed.
Well, you know, a lot of the stuff at top, the top is from the productivity.
Understood. So I had one question.
I know, it's here somewhere.
Yeah, I had one question on what you showed before. I was actually confused at first with your terminal window. It seems to be in like crazy high contrast mode or something like that. I actually thought it was a Windows Forms app at first. So that the thing that was gray.
That popped up the console?
Yeah, that was just the terminal window, command prompt.
And that was just ASP.NET Core doing its thing.
Yeah, I've just never seen that color scheme before. So I could imagine some folks at home being like, what is going on here? But yeah.
Yeah, and it was just relaying like its startup and stuff. And I had not seen this before. Maybe it's some new default with Visual Studio or something, or some setting, I just don't know. And I'm sure there'll be like a million people will want to tell me what I did wrong there. Yeah, but it was just ASP.NET Core just going, doing this, doing that,
Yeah.
HTTP routing, blah, blah, blah.
I got it.
So, and no, it wasn't a Windows Forms app. So all I was
not.
doing was running, you know, running a controller.
Okay,
so
that all worked.
Because it got the tools, I can also add Docker after the fact, and it is hiding somewhere. Ah, here we go. Add Docker support. Okay, so I'll click that, and I have the option of choosing Windows or Linux. And I do want to point out that on my machine, can you see this where it says switch to Windows containers?
Yes.
Okay, so Docker, when you're running the Docker the Docker client application on Windows. So I'm on Windows. I installed Docker, the Docker client, the Docker engine, and by default in Windows, it'll be set to run Windows containers. Windows containers are different than Linux containers, and you can. Just because I'm on Windows doesn't mean I have to use Windows containers. That just means Windows containers is good for hosting certain kinds of things, right? And Linux containers are good for hosting lots of other kinds of things. So I'm doing cross-platform development here, and Linux containers are a lot easier to work with. So I've got my Docker engine set to use Linux containers, which is why this option is switched to Windows, right?
Yep.
And then when I create this Docker file, I'm going to make sure that it's targeting Linux, not Windows.
Yeah, so one pro tip that I do is I have the Docker.
Oh, you know, another thing when you're on Windows is you have to have Hyper-V running for Docker to
work. Yeah, otherwise it doesn't work. But one pro
tip. And I have to go back and forth. Because I use VirtualBox to do my Visual Basic 6 and Fox Pro 2.6 work that I still do for a client that's 25-year-old stuff. So, yeah, I have to go back and forth all the time. Anyway, so there it added this Docker file. And that Docker file that it added, there's a lot going on here, but essentially what it is it's called a multi-stage build. So it's able to build, it creates different images to do whatever it needs. So the image it needs in order to be able to build, to actually build the app, needs the SDK in there. But the image it needs to just run the app doesn't need, it only needs the runtime. So it creates an image for building, these different ones. So that's what that is. What's nice about this is it already knew everything it needed to, and it just created it perfectly for me. So I don't have to worry about making any modifications to it. So I can now just run this, right? But now notice up here, the debug options, before it was data API, no Docker. So that was going to run my API inside of Kestrel. Right. It could also run it inside of IIS Express. But this is running using the Kestrel server. But now I also have this option to run it in Docker. So what that means is it's going to take this whole application and create the, you know, using the instructions inside the Docker file, it's going to build up an image, and then the debugger, this is thanks to the tools, Visual Studio, in debug mode, which is really, really cool. You can debug in this scenario. It will run the image as a container, you know, inside of a container, right? The application will be inside the container. So it'll run the container of my web API, my API application. And it's really cool because, again, I'm assuming you've had people demoing this stuff. I can put, even though it's in the container, I can put breakpoints and everything.
It all works.
Really amazing. So I'm just going to run it containerized. And then there'll be, information. So some of this output you're seeing in the build, this is outputting, that was outputting some of the steps related to what was in the Docker file. Like, it, you know, the Docker file had like a whole bunch of steps. So it's like, I'm doing this step, I'm doing that step. But it's still hitting my breakpoints, which is really cool. So you can debug. And I'm still hitting, I should just get rid of all my breakpoints. It's nice to see them working. Now this is opening up another screen. Now I could be really embarrassed. Oh my God, something went wrong. What to do? But I knew this was going to happen. But this is what happened to me the first time I went through that process of, okay, what happens when I, you know, turn this into a containerized API? So what's going on is it says that local DB isn't supported on this platform. So I am on my Windows machine, right? Like, local DB is perfectly fine. But what's happening, and I really had to get my head around this, the API is inside the Docker container. It's looking for local DB at localhost, and localhost is inside the Docker container, right? I don't have local DB. I don't have SQL Server installed inside that container. All that's in there is, you know, .NET runtime and my code for running the API.
Right. It might as well be on Saturn.
Right. Exactly. And I didn't bring the database with me. So one thing I did, and again, I went through all this in the article, was just to help me comprehend it. I switched from using LocalDB over to using SQLite. We don't have to do that. But I switched the app to use SQLite, and then the result of that was SQLite went inside of the container, inside of the image, along with everything else, and so it runs right there. So this works if I was using SQLite, because SQLite's inside the image. When the image is run as a container, it's inside of there, so it's able to find it, right?
Makes sense. Yeah, you have to, it's a little bit like going on a trip to Europe. You need to make sure you've got everything in your suitcase that you need before you go, because once you're in Europe, you can't put something in your suitcase that's back at your house in Vermont. And so containers are like that. Everything you need has to be provisioned in some way, otherwise it's not going to work out.
Unless I have the internet.
Oh, the internet.
Right? So this is, I'm not sure I know of a scenario where I would actually just use, you know, SQLite inside the container. But, you know, completely self-contained app, actually, that makes sense, right? Completely self-contained, even the database is contained in the Docker, image, and then you can have as many as you want. People just aren't sharing the database.
Well, so one comment on that, though, just so with SQLite or any database for that matter, for you to use in the container, now you're going to get into volume mounting, presumably. Otherwise, the data will be deleted every time you stop the container.
Yeah. I mean, it's not persistent.
Yes.
Yeah, and I don't want to get into that with the, you know, the kind of little hack of the SQLite, but yeah,
totally.
It's just,
I'm just
kind
saying,
of a one-time thing.
That is what you would have to do, right? That's the path you would have to go down.
It's that, yeah, that's another really big thing to understand about containers, right? We have an image, and then the running instance of the image is the container. So if I have a database I create the database inside that container, when that container goes away, so does the database, right?
Yeah.
And then we do have this other, you know, there are other options, but there's this concept of a data volume, which is separate from the container, separate from the image, so that you can have something persistent as long as that volume is not deleted. Right, the volume needs to always be running,
right,
in order for that. So yeah, so that was another interesting thing, and I actually show that in some of these other demos. So what I did was the next step of this, again, in these articles. So there was the part two, right? And the part two, what I did was I said, okay, what I really need to is to have an external data source. So my first stage of that was to say, hey, why don't I just use an Azure SQL database? That's always going to be available no matter where I'm running, right? Where I'm running this app. I could just point to that. It's always going to be the same connection.
Right. This is the let's use the internet option.
Right, exactly. So I have, let's see, I got all these windows open. Let me, you see, I got all these windows open. Oh my God. So I can be sure to share the right one with you. That's the no Docker one.
Yeah, that looks like the same as the one we had before.
Yeah, I haven't switched yet. This is okay. So this is the one where instead of using local DB, I'm using Azure SQL. However, this is really cool. So in my app settings development, for local development, when I'm running this in debug mode, if I was running it as, I'd have to have this be the startup project. So if I was just going to run this in Kestrel, right, run my API on Metal, and I'm in debug mode, it's going to read this. I've got it set up so that it's going to read my connection string from here, and it's going to use local DB. I'm just on Metal on Windows. No, you know, Docker's not involved in this scenario when I'm running in Kestrel. But I'm going to just set the startup project now to Docker Compose. I'm taking advantage of Docker Compose for other reasons as I step up to this. But notice in this Docker file here, in addition to the stuff we saw before, I'm creating an environment variable. And notice the environment variable is no longer my local DB. My environment variable is my Azure SQL database connection string. But not all of it. We scroll to the right. See, this is the problem. I don't want to put my user ID and password, hard code it into the Docker file, share it on GitHub.
Or on this Channel 9 video.
But right, I don't want it in there. So what I did was I've got the connection string and I've got these placeholders for ID and password, placeholder variables. Okay. And then I wanted to find a way to I could create environment variables on my computer, but then I have to recreate them every single time. Right. So I wanted to have a way to have environment variables that were not on my computer, but I didn't have to worry about them in Git, being inside of my source control. So I took advantage of the orchestration, Docker Compose. Now, normally you use Docker Compose to orchestrate multiple containers, but I'm not using multiple containers yet. I've just got the API container, and it's going to talk to this Azure SQL database, right? But what I'm doing is, in my Docker Compose, I'm letting it know that these environment variables exist, and then I'm using Docker environment variables. So Docker also has its way of reading environment variables. And I'm taking advantage of that, and that's where I'm storing my environment variables. Now, notice I have a .env file and a .env fake file because I'm not going to show you my real SQL Azure password.
Right.
So, but Docker Compose will read .env and find the values for these variables.
Right. One of the ways I think of Docker Compose is it's kind of doing Docker from the outside, like with the original scenario that you showed us, that was very much Docker being like fundamentally integrated with that particular project. And I see you still do have a Docker file in your data Docker.
Yeah, and you need the doc. I need the Docker file
right.
because the Docker file is the instructions of how to build the image.
Totally. But with Docker Compose, all of the the steps as opposed to the recipe are all done from the outside, and the data API Docker is unaware of all this. So it brings, I guess, a level of kind of like external formalism to the whole thing.
Yeah. And when we go to the next step, it'll be more obvious because we're orchestrating multiple containers. But notice that this is saying, yes, I'm going to have to build this, here's one of the images. It's the only one that we're working with. It's called Data API Docker. And I want you to name that image Data API Docker. By the way, you're going to have to build it.
Yep.
It doesn't exist yet. So look for a file called Dockerfile inside of the Data API Docker
directory.
Right, folder.
Yeah.
And that's going to give you the instructions to how to build the image. Also, the image is going to need some environment variables. So we're going to pass them into the image. So the environment variable values are not going to be built into the image. They're coming in from the outside. And what this will do, it's not going to put them into the image. It's when the container gets run, it's then going to use them. So it will, this knows that they exist, but normally you could just put the, password, secret. You could set the value of the environment variables right here. But what I'm doing is using, yet another, there's many, many ways of using Docker environment variables. So I'm using the path that says, I'm just going to declare them, and then you're going to have to find them in one of the ways that you know how to find them. And the way it's going to do it is by looking inside my .env file, which
right.
looks just like this, except it has my real password.
Makes
okay.
sense.
Okay. So, it's a lot. And again, in my article, I go through it more
step by
details.
Step.
Yeah. So for people like me, right, like trying to explain, because I went through all of this. So this will all work. I could show it to you or not.
We should probably move on to the next
like the
one. Because I think we have the basic idea now.
Yeah. But the one thing I do want to show is that I am reading, I'm reading the configuration, the connection string, right? And ASP.NET Core is really smart. It looks for configuration information in various places. So it will know, it knows that there might be configuration in app settings. It knows to look on the computer's environment variables, but it also will get fed the Docker environment variables. So those will be there. So if I was running this as in Kestrel, it won't know about the Docker Compose environment variables. So it's going to find them. The only ones it's going to find is the app settings, and that's the local DB. But it uses the last one in, right? So if I'm running this from Docker Compose, the last one in is going to be the environment variables that are coming out of this file. So that's what it's going to read. And then I'm just doing a replace, right? My connection string. Remember I had the placeholders?
Yeah.
So I'm just replacing with the placeholders and then passing that connection string in. So that uses my Azure SQL.
Looks pretty straightforward to me.
All right. So there's one more. How are we doing for time? Like,
well,
do you want to see another?
Yeah, we can do one more, and then.
Yeah, and call it a night.
Yeah.
Okay. Look at they all look alike. Which ones? Okay, that's the one. That one of these is. All right, I'm just gonna pick one and see.
Eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Let's see if it's this one. It's this one. Okay, so. Same exact application, all right? The only difference is that if you look in, well, look in Dockerfile, now I'm not using that base connection string for my SQL Azure. I've got a new connection string in here, and it still has a placeholder for my password, right? I'm not exposing the password. This is because now I'm going to use SQL Server inside a Docker container.
But inside a different one.
Yes. Yes. So there is a SQL Server for Linux. SQL Server for Linux exists as an image, and you can run that. And there's also regular SQL Server is inside a Windows container, so you could also run it that way if you want. But I'm using SQL Server for Linux, and here's how I'm doing it. In my Docker Compose, this will help. I'm going to go back and we're going to look at the connection string again. Now, I still have this data API Docker service, right? Each service describes a different image slash container, like the container that we're going to end up with. So there's the same one. There's a few differences there. Now I have another container described. I've named it DB, and it's based on Microsoft's SQL Server image, right? There's different flavors of this. And Microsoft now, most of their images, you probably know this, most of their images are hosted on Microsoft Container Repository, MCR.
Registry. Yeah.
Thank you. Instead of on Docker Hub. So I don't have to build this image or create it. It already exists. So I'm just saying you're going to use this image. So there's no build instructions, right? Up here, I've got some build instructions to create the image of my API, but here I don't have to do that. I am, in this case, defining a volume, right? We talked about volumes. So this is where I'm going to have persisted data. It's outside of the container, outside of the image. It's a separate place. But because I'm describing it in Compose, it will know how to find all of it based on the syntax I've been using.
Right. And just one point on that. Just one point on that is there's the right-hand side of the volume mount there. And
yeah.
Some folks might think, well, that looks like a pretty crazy path. But basically what that is, for one, it's a Linux-oriented path. That's on a Linux file system. And the second one is, I assume that is the prescriptive location.
It's actually a file path.
Yeah. Yes, but I mean, it's the one you have to use. I assume that's the one where SQL Server chooses to put the data. You don't have any choice on that particular location.
I believe you. Didn't know that. That sounds right.
Yes, I was guessing.
It sounds right.
Yeah.
It might not be, right? Maybe because I'm defining it here, maybe it's going to be wherever I want it to be.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't think that's how it works.
Okay, but I believe you. So this is just a name, my name that I gave it.
Absolutely.
Notice that I'm defining the volume here. So see, I have services and I have volumes. So they're separate, all right? So I'm saying, by the way, I want to have a volume and this is the name I want it to have. And this is saying my database container should use that volume and this is where to find it.
Yeah, can you tell us about the right-hand side where there's the two curly brackets in the volume section? At the very bottom, yeah. What's that all mean?
No, I don't remember. Just how we got it. That's just how, a whole lot of what I learned was from trying things and copying things as opposed to deeply understanding every little thing.
Okay, that's this scenario working example.
Yes, that is this scenario working example.
Perfect.
But I think, yeah, the curly braces related to using, word word that I've known for 30 years just went out of my head. And evaluating, right? And so if we look up here, notice that for the accept EULA, I'm saying the value of that environment variable is Y, no matter what, right?
This literal
string. But here, I'm saying, I'm not telling you the password here. You're going to have to evaluate it, right? We already, here's the environment variable. You're going to know the environment variable, and you're going to find its actual value inside the .env file.
Yeah. I would think, though, if no specific location is specified, then it has to be specified somewhere else. But anyway, we shouldn't drill on this particular thing. You should show us this working.
I was hoping you were going to say, do you know? Oh, you don't? Well, I can tell you.
I haven't used that particular syntax before, so I don't know the answer
so
to that.
So it's just what happened to work in this case when I was desperately trying to get, you know, all the pieces coming together. So this last bit is, you know, do I need to hide the connection string in this case? I don't know, because, I mean, I'm defining the password. I'm defining the password for the sake of creating and running this, right? So it's going to get shared all the way through, but I'm defining it, you know, in .env like I was defining it before. So a couple other things I want to point out. Notice that this says depends on DB. So this won't start doing its thing until it knows DB is up and running.
Right, it's going to erect that container image first.
Yep.
And then it'll erect the other one.
Yep. Now, DB up and running, there's two different definitions of that. The container will start, when you start a SQL Server in a container, the container starts right up, right? But then there's some startup stuff that has to happen afterwards that's defined in the Docker file, in the SQL Server's Docker file. It runs a whole bunch of SQL. Right, there's some scripts that it will run. So the container's up right away, but it's still another like 20 or 30 seconds until it's really ready to use, when all the system databases and things are all set up.
Right. I think that's sometimes referred to as liveness.
Oh, okay, that's cool. Okay, that's a new one for me. All right, and then the other thing. Now notice I've named this DB. I can name it foo, I can name it whatever I want, it's my name, but I'm using the name here, but I'm using it one other place. This is where I go back to the connection string. Notice that the server name is DB.
I was wondering about that.
That's only gonna work when you're doing Docker Compose, because with the orchestration, they're aware of each other. And they're aware of their service names. And
sweet.
That's how it's going to find it. There's no way it's otherwise, how will it ever know?
I feel like, you know, this particular piece is the part that's worth the price of entry.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, a friend on Twitter was asking about that when I mentioned that we were doing this. And he said, oh, I've been trying to do it with MySQL, but I think what he was asking, can't totally remember, but something like, you know, how do I get my API to find MySQL when it's in a container? And it's the orchestration that enables all that to happen.
Sweet. I love it.
Right. Now, if I go back to Docker Compose, I want to point out something else about when I'm running the database container. Notice the ports here. One is, what port is it going to be exposed externally on metal to my Windows machine? I can still interact with this database, even though it's inside of a container. As long as I go, you know, localhost, /1433, you know, or 1600 or 1784 or whatever. Right.
They don't have to match.
Right. That's what it's exposed on the host. But 1433 is the port that it's exposed on internally, and you know that's the classic
right host and then guest
port
is
for,
the way I think of it
for SQL Server, right? 1433.
Yeah.
I'm doing that, so I can have this be whatever I want it to be. That's just for external access. It has nothing to do with my API container accessing it. So do you want me to go ahead and run this?
Sure. Is that still going to work with that number changed? You just changed that to 1783. I kind of have a bad feeling about that. Shouldn't you change it back to how it was?
Yeah, maybe not in the middle of a demo.
Yeah.
I think it ought to work, but yeah, let's just make it. This is how it was working.
Yeah.
But I frequently use various ports because with a Docker, the other nice thing about Docker containers is you can have multiple instances running. So I have different instances of SQL Server running, on the same machine that are all, hosted and managed by Docker Engine. So I have 1600 and 1620 and 1783. So
okay.
You can definitely do that. So
give
I'm
going to
go ahead and run it and cross my fingers because you never know what goes on with these things. Okay, so now it's going through the Docker file steps. Something's going on. Oh, here we go into the startup. And it's built the connection string, and so it's going to push that into the DB context. It's going to migrate. We're hoping it won't hit that exception breakpoint. I think that if I remember the I think the Docker tools will also spin up the website, the web page here. Yep, here it comes. So
same thing. So now, before you close this, can we go back to the VS Code tools or to the command line, whichever one you prefer, and we can show which containers are actually loaded?
Yes. So,
let's just do both for kicks.
Yeah.
So
this doesn't have a huge amount of information.
Yeah.
But so this is one interesting. This was what the tools did. The tools named the container on the fly. It gave it its its tag, and then the name I requested in Docker Compose, Data API Docker. I guess I had a different. I've done it a few times, so it did underscore one. And here's the SQL Server container that's running. Again, it gave the container the name of this running debug session, right? And then DB, and then again, underscore one. And it's
makes
been
sense.
Up for two seconds.
Let's look at the command line.
We should
yeah.
look at the volume, right? Docker volume ls. So there's actually two Docker volumes running because of different things I've been doing.
Yeah.
And so this data one, again, with this, there's that preface, right? And then the name that I defined in Docker Compose, MS SQL Server Julie Data. And then Docker PS, right? There are my two
totally.
Dockers.
And is there a Docker-Compose
right.
LS?
There are my two containers.
Is there a Docker Compose LS? Is that a thing? Can we try it?
I have actually never tried that before. Let's see what Docker Compose.
Okay, is there an LS?
List containers. There isn't an
PS.
LS.
PS.
But PS list containers. I wonder how that's different. Can't find a suitable container.
Oh, it's because you're in the wrong location. Never mind. Yeah, you would have to be in the place where your Docker Compose file lives. Let's skip that.
Okay.
Okay, well, this was awesome. So I think we pretty much covered everything.
Cool. And it was an enormous amount of learning going through that and getting stuck for hours on one problem and hours on another thing and reading a million things. And, because I have to spend many, many hours on a problem before I humble myself and ask for help. So stupid. Do you find you do the same thing?
The only advantage I have is I sit in a team room with basically geniuses. So I've actually become quite lazy. So I spend like 10 seconds thinking about something. It's like, actually, I could do this, but it's too hard. I'm just going to ask, Jared.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Well, where else should people be looking at? So, you showed your website, the Data Farm.
Yeah.
And your MSDN magazine article. So we'll put both of those links in the show notes.
Yeah.
And I know you're on Twitter.
Yeah, a little too much.
Yes. Okay, awesome. Well, thanks for being on the show today. We learned a lot.
It was really fun. It's really fun to be able to share this stuff. Writing it as an article is one way of expressing it, but actually showing somebody and going, oh, look, this is cool, blah, blah, blah. And so I really appreciate the opportunity.
For sure. Okay, this has been another episode of the On.NET show, and hope you learned something about containerized database-oriented applications. Thanks for watching.